Hi, my name is Brendan Bigley. This is The Internet Today, the show where I find the best stuff on the internet so you don't have to. Sometimes, occasionally, I'll talk about not the best stuff on the internet, but the stuff that bums me out the most. In this case, it would have to be the whole situation that unraveled with the Rick and Morty Szechuan sauce debacle at McDonald's. It sounds so dumb coming out of my mouth, and it's only gonna get worse, so buckle your seatbelt. Let me make a very long story very short for people who don't watch Rick and Morty. Rick and Morty is a show that is kind of a cartoon ripoff of Back to the Future that is nihilistic and sad. I put it in the same realm as a show like BoJack Horseman, which is about exploring sadness and one's destructiveness when it comes to their own lives. And one of the big jokes from the season premiere for the most recent season of Rick and Morty was essentially about Rick's obsession with this sauce that McDonald's had as a promotional item as a tie-in with the Disney film Mulan. It was a Szechuan teriyaki sauce that only existed for a couple weeks. And on the show, Rick mentions this sauce, says that it's, quote, his season arc. The reason he does everything is because of the sauce, because he wants it to come back so badly. And without explaining everything that has happened in the show up until that point, or even the impetus for him saying that in that episode, it's really just like a goof. It's really just supposed to be played as a laugh. Like, the idea that a character's driving motivation could be something as dumb as a promotional sauce that existed at McDonald's for a couple weeks. The part that's supposed to be funny about it is that you could replace the sauce with literally anything. More importantly, you could replace the sauce with nothing. There's a driving exploration of existentialism on that show, and I think the sauce could easily be a stand-in for literal nothingness. Like, the main character does what he does for absolutely no reason. There's almost an anarchy to the way that he comes up with and executes plans. But anyway, ever since this episode aired, people have been tweeting incessantly at McDonald's, begging them to bring the sauce back. So without consulting Cartoon Network or the creators of Rick and Morty, and by getting as close as they possibly could without breaking any kind of copyright, McDonald's decided to, for one day, bring this sauce back with a very targeted ad campaign directed at Rick and Morty fans, who then showed up on the day that this sauce was supposed to exist, only to find that they didn't make enough, which then caused fans of this show to, like, revolt. Like, police had to show up at McDonald's locations because these people wouldn't stop screaming at, like, minimum wage McDonald's employees. It's just, like, it's just really sad. It's just, like, a really sad thing. Because to me, at least, it feels like a prime example of a fan base feeling entitled to something, but also not understanding the context of that thing. Rick's real season arc in Rick and Morty is not the hunt for a Szechuan sauce, but it's understanding that his obsessions and his attitude on life is destructive not just to him, but also to everyone around him, and it makes all of his relationships worse. To go out to a McDonald's and demand the Szechuan sauce like he does, angrily, to me shows a real misunderstanding of the thesis of Rick and Morty. And it's a huge bummer, because that show is good. It's a good show. I enjoy watching it. But now I'm, like, embarrassed to say that out loud after what happened over the weekend. I can't even believe that I'm talking about this, but I've been thinking about it a lot, and I felt the need to say it, so here we are. Onward. One of the stories I saw referenced most last week was that Netflix is raising its prices for its standard and premium plans. Not its very basic plan. I forget what the difference is between all three of them, but they only went up by a dollar each. I think it went from $10 to $11 and like $13 to $14. I know the premium plan gets you, like, you can watch Netflix on unlimited screens, and also you can stream in 4K, something along those lines. People flipped out, as you would expect. Today, Hulu announced that they're actually lowering their prices. Their basic plan, which used to be $8 a month, is now only $6 a month. It went down by $2. This is not the plan that has commercial-free viewing. This is not the plan that has live TV. This is their most basic with commercials plan. But still, $6 is actually pretty good. One of the things that I found most interesting about Hulu, they redesigned the way their app looks and operates, and it's, like, really, really, really difficult to use in a way that bums me out. It seems, like, not conducive to binging, which is important, because as Netflix is starting to lose all of the shows that they used to have, Friday Night Lights just left, 30 Rock just left, Hulu is starting to pick those shows back up, which allows for a, like, multi-season binge situation on Hulu instead of Netflix, where, like, that was usually happening. Netflix is now going the more HBO model of like creating their own shows, getting movies for limited amounts of time, kind of ditching that thing that made us all subscribe to Netflix in the first place, which was like, okay, you have every single season of 30 Rock, so I'm just going to sit here and I'm going to have 30 Rock playing in the background while I do work. That is now a Hulu thing. Hulu, I think, although it's cool that they're picking all that stuff up and it's cool that they're making it cheaper to access, their new redesign makes it more difficult to do that thing. But we'll see what happens over time, because honestly, I'm sure they're getting that feedback a lot. So hopefully someone over there is compiling that and figuring out how to fix it. But cool for Hulu. If you don't have a subscription to Hulu, I highly recommend it. I cut the cord. I have Netflix and I have Hulu, and it's great. And also, they are also starting to make their own TV shows, like Castle Rock, which is the Stephen King show that's coming out soon, which I wasn't excited at all about until I saw some of the ads for it today. So I am in now the other recording booth that we have here at Anchor, our one with a fancy mixer and multiple mics, because I'm sitting here talking to Maya.
Hello.
Maya is the host of The Dairy Connection.
A very serious podcast.
Yeah, about Stephen King, the author. Because I wanted to talk quickly about Castle Rock, which is a show that's coming out on Hulu. I watched the trailer today. You've seen the trailer already.
Mm-hmm.
Premiered at Comic-Con, New York Comic-Con, just right down the street. Question for you. Like, well, I guess, first of all, like, what is Castle Rock, the idea of Castle Rock?
Castle Rock is one of the towns that's in a lot of Stephen King books and stories. So yeah. The two most famous ones are Castle Rock and Derry. Derry is based on Bangor, Maine, and Castle Rock is based on Lisbon Falls, Maine, which is where Stephen King grew up, I think.
Mm. So, like, what stories would people know of that took place in Castle Rock?
I'm sorry, I just put a cracker in my mouth. Needful Things.
Okay.
The Dark Half. There's a bunch of short stories.
Yeah.
Those are the two that come to mind. And it's also like mentioned in a lot of stories.
Yeah. So essentially what I'm gathering from Castle Rock, which...
Cujo? I want to say Cujo?
Takes place in Castle Rock?
I think so.
The thing that's interesting about the show, A, it's airing on Hulu, and B, it's being produced by J.J. Abrams, who is notoriously secretive, even to a fault a lot of times. It seems like the show is going to be about tracking the connections between Stephen King stories, which is what your whole podcast is about.
Yeah.
Is that cool or shitty for you?
It's really cool.
Yeah, I think it's really cool also.
I think that my website is about to get a lot more hits.
Probably. Oh my God. Yeah, true.
I got to work on my SEO. Ooh, help me.
I will. There are three interesting points of note in the trailer. Number one is that you see a bumper sticker for Shawshank, mm-hmm. which is the prison from The Shawshank Redemption.
Uh-huh.
We have Sissy Spacek, who played Carrie in Carrie.
Yep.
And we have Bill Skarsgård, who played Pennywise in the new version of It.
Yep.
One of the things that people have been wondering is if Castle Rock is going to be a prequel in a way to It. We're going to see like where Pennywise came from. And I wanted to get you in the recording studio to ask you, Maya, are you even interested in that? Is that a thing that you're like, that's cool, I want to know more? Or are you like, it is good as is?
I would definitely enjoy that take on it, but I don't think that it's canon that Pennywise was a normal person before he became Pennywise.
Right.
So I feel a little weird about that.
Yeah.
Because Pennywise, first of all, is just one like version of It, which is a immortal being who is like part of the universe. So I don't really see how you could be like, oh, here's Pennywise as a teenager. Like that doesn't really make sense to me.
Yeah. I did a little bit of research.
Yeah. What did you find?
Just like looking into the connections that are kind of revealed in The Dark Tower, which is Stephen King's book series that, for those of you who don't know, that connects all of his other books.
Mm-hmm.
And how Pennywise is like legitimately just the personification or like an embodiment of this like dark force that exists in the Dark Tower. And the reason that like none of the adults ever like talk about it is because like they've been poisoned literally by this weird dark force that is emanating from Pennywise, all this weird stuff. So it is weird to say that this like physical embodiment of evil is actually just like a dude.
Is there any thing in the trailer that makes people think that it's a prequel, or it's just that the guy who played Pennywise is in...
It's just him and he's looking creepy and he's in a prison.
Right.
And,
I just wonder if it might be the kind of thing where they're just reusing an actor.
Yeah.
Or here's a thought. Maybe it's that when it was choosing its Pennywise clown makeup,
mm-hmm.
human body, it saw this guy who was kind of creepy in Castle Rock, and maybe that's why it looks like that.
Maybe. I mean, that would be interesting.
That would make much more sense than this guy turning it. Or, ooh, I could also see, now I have a lot of ideas.
Yeah.
I could also see, like, that it killed that guy and sort of like soaked him into, you know, to make a new persona.
His body kind of. Yeah.
So, yeah. Okay. I'm interested.
Yeah. So I was not interested really in watching this. I haven't really been over the moon about any Hulu originals at all, with the exception of the Mindy Project, which I liked before it was a Hulu show. But watching the trailer and seeing him and Sissy Spacek, and then looking back and then finding out that they only cast him after he was cast as Pennywise in It kind of made me a little bit more interested. And then obviously Stephen King has given it his blessing, and J.J.
Abrams. He gives everything his blessing, though, for the record.
True. Yeah, he's like the opposite of...
He said they did a very good job on the Dark Tower movie.
Oh, whoops.
Yeah.
J.J. Abrams, who like I think has a very good track record, even though people make fun of him for his like lens flare and stuff.
Who did 11/22/63? Was that also him, or who was that?
I don't know who did that. I mean, that was Hulu.
Right. It might have been J.J. Abrams, too. I'm not sure.
Maybe.
I'll tell you what I would like Castle Rock to be about that I don't think it's going to be about is maybe. I wish that it was just the actual story. I hope that it is the actual stories that take place in Castle Rock.
Yeah.
Because even just between Needful Things already is sort of like a bunch of small stories. And I could see that working really well in that format. Mm-hmm. And the Dark Half as well has a lot of like, it has a lot of overlap with other stories, and it has a lot of like small side stories within the bigger mystery.
Yeah.
So I think it would be cool if it was like one of the episodes is Cujo, and it's, and like the sheriff has to go deal with the Cujo thing. So it's like, you see the other side of the Cujo story.
Yeah, that'd be very cool.
So that's what I would like to see, something that shows like the feel of Castle Rock while these, so it's like, I want to see neighbors being suspicious of each other, and like this, like seclusive, writer, reclusive, I mean, like sitting in his house being weird, like I would really like that.
Yeah, that'd be very interesting.
Yeah.
Maya, thank you for joining me.
Thank you. My new episode of the Dairy Connection podcast will be out tomorrow, and I talk a lot about the Stephen King multiverse if you're interested.
Mm-hmm. And you can find it on Anchor.
Yep. Bye.
Aloha. There are a couple of really interesting things happening in the world of self-driving cars. Number one is that Waymo, which is a Alphabet company, has just started a public relations marketing push to kind of get people in Arizona specifically to be more comfortable with self-driving cars. And that is because Waymo is going to be testing a completely driverless ride-sharing service very soon in Arizona. So I think they're trying to maybe head off some of the potential backlash, I'll say. Speaking from experience, I've talked a lot about self-driving cars and robotics and automation and things like that on this show, and then shared that out through the Anchor Twitter account. And the response is generally negative. If you're listening to the show, and you do listen to the show a lot, I assume you probably are kind of on my wavelength. You think that this stuff is kind of cool. Yes, like, some of it's going to have to get regulated. You know, safety procedures and things like that are going to need to be put into place. But I do think, like, it is worth exploring that end goal of, like, no one owns a car anymore. Everyone just uses ride-sharing, and it's all autonomous. And when the cost of that goes down low enough, maybe hand-in-hand with electric cars instead of cars that run on gas and things like that, it becomes cheaper to do an automated ride-sharing service than it does to own a car. Like, that is a future that I want, and I actively am excited about. And I think that the founders of Waymo, and also just like Uber and Lyft and all of the car companies in general, are kind of working towards making that happen. But there are a lot of people who are made very uncomfortable by that idea, partially because they don't trust the technology behind it, because they don't understand it, which is very valid. I hear this all the time, and I forget who this quote is attributed to, but there's this idea that there's a certain point where technology becomes so advanced that it's indistinguishable from magic. Like, when cars are just driving around by themselves, running on, like, a multitude of complex systems, I personally, someone who I think identifies as very techie, I have no idea how any of that works. That might as well be fucking bibbidi-bobbidi-boop, a magic car, you know? Like, who knows? But Waymo is trying to quell some of that fear with a big PR thing. So I guess if you live in Arizona and you listen to this, expect to see a lot of Waymo